Welcome to the Amplifying Leadership Podcast. I am your host, Tara Lehman, a partner, coach, and consultant at Twin Life Coaching and Business Services, of which Amplifying Leadership is a division. This podcast is a place dedicated to amplifying your leadership through our guest stories, tips, information, and more. To learn more about our leadership division, please visit us at amplifyingleadership.ca. Today, I am welcoming Scott Ramey, an authentic sales expert, former Fortune 500 C-suite executive, and founder of the Ramey Group. Welcome to Amplifying Leadership.
Thanks, Tara. I appreciate you having me. I'm excited for this conversation.
Yes, me too. And I know you're a leader, and I know you are just telling me a little bit about your background, but why don't you share that with our audience so they know who we're talking to today?
Oh, yeah, I'd be happy to. So 32 years in corporate America, and not so recently departed these days, but now I'm a coach and consultant and work with really my forte is around underperforming sales leaders and underperforming leaders in general. Mm-hmm. And so when I kind of think about my experiences, Rory Vaden is somebody I admire and respect and love and appreciate, but he says we're most uniquely qualified to help the person we once were. So when I look at that, some stints in my career where it maybe wasn't optimal from a performance standpoint, you know, I really want to lean in and help those folks. But I'm a small town Indiana kid, grew up. I'll never forget watching my parents buy two different homes on a handshake. I could go to
really.
Local. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, the guy who owned the property was a family friend, and my parents didn't have a lot of resources back then. We could go to a local furniture store and buy furniture on a handshake and have it sent to my grandmother's house if she needed a new couch, a new chair. It's just the principles that I learned there I really took with me through my career. I was in the financial services industry for all three decades of my career.
Okay,
and went from internal sales, external sales, operations. At one point I ran all of operations for an organization, was responsible for $350 billion in assets and 5 million customers. That wasn't really my strong suit, but it was a great experience to learn the other side of the business. And then, but really where I landed was around sales and business development. And so I'm just trying to help bring positive information and experiences learned into the real world for people in a practical way, so it makes sense for them.
That's awesome. And I love that you're wanting to shape moving forward based on what works and what doesn't, right? And I know your topic is about leading and engaging teams, specifically sales, because that's why you have done that. Why is that topic so important for you? What is it about that that speaks to you?
Yeah, and I think this probably, I hope this resonates with a lot of your leaders and sales leaders that are in your audience. You know, what I find is that, the way I think of this in a metaphorical sense is that, the sales organization is often the tip of the spear, but also sometimes mm-hmm. the sales leader also the archer as well. And so you yes. have this duality, and the organization looks to you kind of as an operating tempo point of view. Like as you go, the organization goes, because revenue is so important for all things within mm-hmm. the organization. And there was a time in my career where I felt extraordinary pressure, and I didn't feel like I had the tools and resources to be successful. But maybe more importantly, I don't know that I necessarily had the self-awareness to make myself successful. So when I think about leading self, leading your team, and leading the org in that order, mm-hmm. that's where I really have a lot of passion and energy. And it does stem from an authentic point of view. So what I didn't share with you, my background, is I had my first panic attack while I was at Niagara University as a junior. And that started to shape kind of this belief. And one of the major themes that I talk a lot about is turn towards the tension. We want to avoid mm-hmm. the tension. We want to avoid maybe conflict or confrontation even. But I think really the secret to success long-term as a leader, and especially as a sales leader, is to get really clear about who you are, what you stand for, get your team aligned with that. And then you can start to do the most important thing, which is influence the organization and get them rallied behind that vision and that energy that you want to bring forward. And so again, mm-hmm. you learn lessons the hard way. And, but it's also was a great experience because, knock on wood, and thank goodness I wasn't under a lot of pressure most of my career because we were having success. But those moments that where you find that you're under pressure, that's really what I've been called to do and help those individuals.
I love that you talk about turning into these things rather than avoiding, because the more we avoid, the more almost our cultures become more toxic, right? We become more gossipy even. Like, it really doesn't help when we're trying to engage and teach. So I love that you mentioned that, because avoiding problems, avoiding conflict, avoiding whatever doesn't help a company move forward, right?
It certainly doesn't. And thank you for that acknowledgement too. And I'll receive that. So it's just, you know, the validation from someone like yourself who's in the coaching and development space is really important. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. No, it doesn't help. And I joke, you know, Jim Collins in Good to Great didn't write blame is the secret sauce. It wasn't chapter three, you know, the secret blame is the secret. In fact, what I found is organizations that are under pressure become super toxic. And, you know, yes. I think oftentimes people conflate confront, which for me, confront is simply stating the obvious. This is what's happening without judgment. Like, this is just the facts. And then as an organization and leaders in the organization, let's organize ourselves around fixing that problem. Now, again, the cause of the problem I solve under performance is inattention. Dare I say even negligence, but that seems to be a trigger word, so we won't go down that path. But confront versus confrontation are two very different things. And what I've mm-hmm. seen in my career with leaders is an unwillingness to do either, really. And it becomes mm-hmm. water cooler chatter and back channel conversations. And, you know, everything happens, but the thing that needs to happen is, like, let's address the issue together, mm-hmm. get everybody aligned, and we can all move lockstep forward and really change the trajectory of the organization. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, on the surface, you think these are fundamental, but I've, like you, we've been around a long time mm-hmm. and we still see it. That behavior still persists because it's, I think a lot of people just aren't really clear about their core values and what, and aligning their core values with their team and the organization. So it's a fascinating phenomenon. It really is. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that whole leading ourselves and that self-reflection as leaders, something that I truly believe in as well, because I think it helps us really understand who we are as the leader of our team or the organization, if you're a business owner. It really helps us understand that. And when we understand ourselves and our core values of ourselves and our business, it's much easier to teach our employees, to lead them by example, things like that. So let me ask you this. Are there some key components that you think that our leaders out there listening, or even new leaders, really should focus on to develop not just who they are, but through self-reflection, but also their skill or, you know, who they are for their team?
Oh, I love this question. So thank you for asking it. I think there's four steps to it. One is reveal your true identity and self. And I think it's simple to oversimplify the exercise, because it can be way more complicated to this, is to define your core values. So mm-hmm. it's something I went through 13, 14 years ago within a 2-day workshop, where I literally would mapped out my entire life, the highs and the lows and what resonated and what didn't. And what came out of that for me was this is what I call the reveal stage, step one of my process in self. What came out of that was trust, decency, performance, team first, image of leadership. Mm-hmm. And so those were core values I took into every team I led. And what's interesting, Tara, is like when I found that, and particularly in an underperforming environment, I let go of those core values. I compromised those core values. What I've now in a point of awakening, shall we say. So that would be step one. Two is reframing scarcity to abundance. I mean, I think when you're in that moment where you're feeling under pressure, like, how do I get myself out of this mess? It seems like I liken it to carrying a piano on your back. You just feel like you mm-hmm. can't carry any more weight. Your health starts to be compromised. Your energy is depleted. So that is for me, I think that's stop asking what's safe and start asking what's possible. And you start to reframe it.
Yeah.
The third is just reflecting before you answer. And, you know, I think a team that can't rise if the leader's unraveling. And so we need to be calm in the storm. But we also just need to stabilize ourselves so we can stabilize our team. And then the last step is just reimagining what's possible. I think this is probably the most important, is that you need, if you can dream it with detail, you can build it with direction, and you need to get in an exercise, quiet time exercise, and say, okay, I understand where I am in this moment, where the organization is, where the team is, but what is my ideal scene? What is mm-hmm. it going to look like a year from now, or 2 years from now? And then if you get yourself right, now you can turn your attention to the team and start to reframe and rebuild the team in a way that is in this new moment. And it makes me think of the old proverb that, you know, a person can't step in the same river twice because the river's always moving. Organizations, especially now, there's such velocity to change.
Isn't there? It's every minute of every day.
All the time. And so your ideal scene literally could change every week based upon market conditions, competitive factors, artificial intelligence. I mean, go on and on and on about all these variables. And I've seen time and time and time again in organizations and with people, even people I, especially people I work with, is what they thought was the ideal scene that aligned with their core values has shifted, but they're not shifting with it. And so I think that's such an important perspective to have.
And I love that you bring up the idea of that. I call it vision casting, but looking out what is the ideal situation that we want? Because when we see that, and yes, it changes, we know it changes all the time, but if we at least understand what that is, it makes it easier for us to, reframe, as you mentioned, those thoughts that you're just saying, I don't know what I'm going to do with this mess, instead of saying, I wonder where we can start today so we can get back on track.
Love
You
that. Yeah.
know?
I love that. Famous Canadian Bob Proctor says, if you can, what is it? It's the round. If you can create it in your head, you can create it in your hand. And the idea of vision is so important that you, it pulls you. And I think the important part around that, Tara, I think from where I, my experience, leading organizations and working with clients, is it just when you're in a creative state, you can't be in a reactive state. The what's created with the serotonin and the oxytocin's created in creativity, that same stressors can't be available to you when you're in creative mode. They just can't. It's physically impossible for your body to have both this euphoria about what's possible and the stress hormones that exist. It's fascinating when you get into a really creative position, how your it shifts your mindset.
Absolutely, and I agree with you. And I've heard that before as well, that you can't do both. And that's why, sometimes I tell leaders and my clients, do the simplest things of reframing, like we just talked about, or using the word yet. So I'll never make the sales. Well, how about we say, I haven't made the sales yet. Let's make our mind, that creativity and the innovation, come to fruition, right? That opens our mindset. And I brought up numbers, which is something that, especially for you with your sales teams, is really, really important. And for business owners, the numbers mean everything. But sometimes those numbers can really stop us in our tracks if we feel like we're not meeting them. And so really reframing the I'm not getting there to, you know what, we're not there yet. What can we do as a team to meet those numbers, right?
Yeah.
How can a leader help support that?
Well, so it's interesting because I think now we're getting to kind of the concept of team. If I think of how I think about this is trust is the number one component.
Yes,
And so
agreed.
oftentimes organizations will have a successful year, but maybe it's not within on a continuum of like sustainable success. And so we create really ambitious targets, which look, I'm a huge fan of ambition, target visioning. We just talked about that,
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
big audacious goals, 100%. But forecasting is so important. And so oftentimes we're setting unrealistic, for sales teams specifically, we're setting unrealistic goals based upon a previous year that probably or could have had some anomalies, perhaps. And then we're essentially setting our teams up not to have the success they did. And so I think about this continuum of performance improvement plans, and we're really putting ourselves in the organization in a difficult spot. So you'll hear things from your teams like, for example, I don't know why we have such an aggressive goal. You know, so and so had a big deal last year that skewed the numbers.
Yeah, I've
Know,
heard all
expect
those.
yeah, oh yeah, of course. But expectations get set so high. So I think you have to be really thoughtful and reasonable as leaders to say, okay, what is truly a realistic sales goal? And are we aligned as an organization to reach those goals? And going back to this concept of inattention, if there are outliers and specific things that are occurring that is going to, that would potentially put the sales organization in a difficult spot, and by extension, puts the organization in a difficult spot. And by extension of that, puts leadership in it, is particularly if it's publicly traded and they have to explain why they're not hitting their quotas. I just think it really is all around trust. And if you have that perspective going into your planning process in this, late second quarter, third quarter, beginning of fourth quarter for the next year, it sends a powerful message, spoken and unspoken, when as leaders we say, you know what, we understand the market environment, we understand we're getting good feedback from the front lines, we're listening to that feedback, and you're starting out on the front foot versus on your heels at the beginning of the new year. But I can't tell you the number of times year after year I find that happening in organizations where they're setting themselves up for failure before the year even begins.
Yeah, I agree. I see that a lot too when I talk to my clients about the numbers, and they're, as you said, the big audacious goals out there that just don't motivate a team. And that could be your sales team to everybody else who's helping you get that sale, like your warehouse and all the people in the office that help you get that sale.
Yeah.
They're going to start to not believe in the values of the company, of the leader, because this goal is huge. It's okay to have that goal as long as there's also a reasonable goal. Would you agree? Like, let's have both. Let's say this is what we strive for, but this is what we believe will happen with the market.
And that's exactly what I used to do. Like the big audacious goal, but then, I would call maybe like the sales related thought leadership thinking goal, and then the finance related goal. I mean, the two can be different. And because you want the organization, I mean, selling the vision, kind of vision casting to your words, Tara, selling the vision to the organization and creating and generating excitement around that. There's arguably nothing more important. I mean, I think if you look at why people are leaving, it's one, and you probably heard this as well. I don't believe in the direction. I don't trust what's happening. We don't have a vision. And these are things I would hear quite frequently when the organizations, and now when I'm working with organizations in a consultancy, I hear that quite a bit. And that's around the ability to create clarity around where we're going and what we're doing. So big audacious goals are certainly important. But
yeah.
I would also argue that in addition to trust, empathy is super important. And I would define empathy as authentic interest by leadership and leaders. I love the quote, music is a space between the notes. And when we're interacting with our teams, you talk about inspiring confidence and trust. When we're interacting with our teams and we're picking up on the unspoken words, that's where I find the magic starts to occur with a team. And when, as you know, if your sales team is struggling and you're leaning into it, say, okay, I want to understand why, picking up on those cues that are oftentimes unspoken, because for whatever reason, and this is it's just how it works, is that when somebody has a certain title in an organization, many people are often unwilling to be really direct and honest with that person. It's just a fact.
Yeah, it's true. It's a fact. You're right.
And so, it then becomes beholden on us as leaders to start to identify those unspoken words and unspoken truths, and to dig a little bit deeper and show authentic interest. And I think this, we talked about authentic selling in the opening. That's my expertise. That's really about moving from a transactional conversation into an energetic conversation. And which means not coming with a specific bias, like, oh, I know why we're not delivering on our quota or not hitting our goals or we're not meeting my aspiration as a leader. I'm bringing a bias to that conversation versus going there with just true openness and willingness to listen, no matter what one might say, and creating a safe enough environment that has trust and empathy. But the thing I've noticed is that accountability doesn't have to be thrown by the side just because you're having these conversations. You can confront a situation and still hold people accountable. You can have a difficult conversation and still hold people accountable. It's a both and versus an either or.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said a few words that speak to me so much. The listening when you are a leader with any team, including sales, is really, really important, because sometimes that listening, when we're focused on people, you can see, quote unquote, what they're not saying, you just by their face or they're not speaking up, and being authentic also builds that trust, so that you do get that kind of open mindset happening where people feel comfortable telling you those things that maybe they wouldn't tell you before, right? So building that authenticity as a leader and that trust will help those teams be more creative, innovative, and not so closed mind, especially if they're not meeting goals. Let me ask you this. If we had a new leader who's starting out, how would you help them understand, how do we build this? How do we build the empathy, the authenticity, the trust so that our team will start to think differently and have more of a growth mindset, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I think from a, that's a great question. From a very practical standpoint is just listen more, talk less. You know, I think
two ears, one mouth, right?
Well, for sure. And, you know, and to this point around authentic interest and listening and, you know, mirror neurons are a quantum mechanics, quantum theory concept. And it's true. I mean, what we're seeing now, more and more studies are saying like the energy that you are when you're connecting with someone, I mean, truly connecting with somebody, it's a reciprocal energy relationship, mm-hmm. not just a mechanical mm-hmm. going through the motions relationship. So I would encourage very quickly if I were going back 30 plus years and put myself in the shoes, it would really lean into listening and being really, really curious. Now, that's I mentioned you know, my panic attacks and the anxiety. I've had anxiety my entire life. I think because my empathetic or empathy-driven mindset around anxiety, it probably gave me kind of an unfair advantage in a positive way in terms of my ability. I didn't want the attention to be on me. Mm-hmm. So by extension, I would just be really, really curious with people because if I was being really, really curious, then nobody's going to ask me questions. Therefore, I'm not in the spotlight. I wouldn't be as anxious. It proved to be a really good strategy to build great teams.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I think that's something I've now learned to be empathic, the energy, I'm feeling energy in conversations. So it's probably many instances where I thought maybe I was anxious. I wasn't anxious at all. It was because I had a large title and large role in the organization and people probably had that energy with me. I've come to appreciate that and kind of taken a more positive point of view on it rather than just having anxiety my entire life.
Yeah.
But so many leaders earlier in their leadership career are so interested in proving how much they know and what they know.
Very true.
Listening and being that empty cup and letting others fill up their cup on their behalf.
I love that you mentioned the word curiosity because it's something I also talk to leaders about is if they're feeling stuck with how to develop their teams, it doesn't matter if they're sales teams or other teams, using your ears first, right? But then asking the curiosity questions, you know, open questions, not yes or no questions. Just even where do you think we should take this? Or what do you feel our next step should be to meet that target? You know, and the curiosity piece, I think was a huge benefit likely for you back then and something I wish I wasn't so, you know, back then again, so closed around because I love the idea of curiosity. I mean, when we were kids, we were all curious, right?
Totally.
You know, why is the sky blue? Why is the spider on my, you know, have eight legs, whatever. As adults, we need to have that same curiosity, but in a different way with our teams. What are your thoughts around that?
Oh, I love this. I love this conversation. I remember I have two daughters. We have two daughters, Michelle and I, my wife have two daughters, 23 and soon to be 22. Mm-hmm. I recall watching them. They could watch this movie, the same movie over and over and over and over and over and over again and laugh more in some cases than they did the first time. So that being very interested and curious all the time is lost somewhere along the continuum mm-hmm. for whatever reason with us. The thing that's the interesting part about newer leaders as well that I I've stumbled across an interesting, and it's not new, but self-determination theory, which suggests that people really look for three things: autonomy. So, mm-hmm. you know, your teams want, those that are listening who have teams, they want autonomy. They want independence.
They do.
But they don't want to be left alone. They want competence, which means how do I train this person up and give them the skill necessary in order to be successful? And from that standpoint, they also want relatedness. So the third, so autonomy, competence, and relatedness. Relatedness to me is a relational connection to my leader. And so, you know, leaders who are newer to management or leadership, again, want to be right, want to have a share of what they know, want to make a good impression, all positive attributes, by the way. They're not negative attributes. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're very positive attributes. But one of the best things you can do is bring your team into conversations, into decision-making. I've worked for a leader once that was completely autonomous by this own individual's admission, never would bring even the senior leadership team for decision-making. Mm-hmm. And I saw how that just deteriorated trust and confidence in the mm-hmm. future of the group, and particularly casting that vision. There was no vision to cast. And more importantly, those people weren't brought into it. So if you're a newer leader and taking over an experienced team, that relational aspect, you'll give them freedom and flexibility, but help give them the tools and resources. But most importantly, bring them into the journey. Give them a heads up where you're going. It's not a new phenomenon, but I think the self-determination theory now kind of has defined what I've experienced my whole career.
And it's almost like guiding the team rather than micromanaging the team, even as a new leader, especially if the team is already solid and you're brand new into it, right? Mm-hmm. It's guiding towards where we want to go, supporting them however they need it, resources or whatever, but not the closed, we have to do this, do that. It's really about bringing out that guidance, that curiosity, all the things that we've talked about, the listening, all that kind of stuff, which I think is so important to new leaders and even leaders who are seasoned going to a brand new company, right?
Especially
go ahead.
To a new company. Yeah, no, I was just going to build on what you said. Yeah, 100%. I mean, new leaders, new company, new role. I had a mentor once back in the day, and what she shared with me is that when you take on a new role, you're non-existent. Mm-hmm. And you should, like, I would do that. I would go into a new role, new organization. Everybody would know who I was because of, I was just hired into a senior role. It was always, hi, I'm Scott Ramey. Tell me what you do. What do I need to know about your role? How can I help you? And then start to really engage each individual in a different way, because everybody, you know, again, if self-determination theory is correct, and I believe it to be correct, everybody wants to be autonomous, and everybody wants mm-hmm. to have, but they want to know where they fit into the bigger puzzle and what they can do to help participate in the effort, not be direct dictatorial. It's like, this is where we're going. This is your role. People want to be involved. They really do.
Mm-hmm. They want to be heard, valued.
100%.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let me, as I love this conversation, but we're going to have to wrap up shortly. So if you were to give, you know, that one piece of advice out there to leaders around this topic, what would you tell them? What would your big piece takeaway be today?
I think first and foremost is take the mask off and be authentically you, number one.
Yeah. I love that. Take the mask off. I love that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Unmask yourself. Reground you in who you truly are, and you will be far better off than, you know, trying to fit in, be a part of the club, or whatever it might be, compromising your integrity because you feel like you have to do something a specific way because of whatever pressures you're feeling in that. And you know, I think we all want to be liked, we all want to fit in, we all want to do a great job, but mm-hmm. I think unmasking your true identity of who you truly are. And when I would always go back to my roots as a small town Indiana kid, things would work out for me
mm-hmm.
because people could relate to who I was, and I wasn't pretending to be somebody else. And
yeah.
at the end of the day, you know, I think about affinity, communication, shared experience. My responsibility was to have deep connections with my team, communicate with a high level of clarity, and create an understanding that we're all in this together, and create those memories along the way. And just beautiful things happen when that's the case.
We're all human, right?
That's
We
right.
want to be treated like that, not a
That's
number
right.
Or, you know, you've got to do this. This is what you need to do today. Yeah. Excellent. I greatly appreciate our conversation today. If our audience did want to learn more about you or connect with you somewhere, can they do that online?
Of course. LinkedIn is where I live, and, the Scott Ramey. So the THE Scott, 2 T's, Ramey, RAMEY.com is my website. So I'm happy to be a resource, a sounding board, and you can connect there with a free call anytime.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I loved your tips and just your experiences and sharing all that with us today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Of course, a thank you to our audience today. We hope you were able to gain some valuable information or tips. If you are a leader who knows that leadership coaching, consulting, and community are the way to grow on your journey, or perhaps you want to be a leader one day and wish to learn more about our Rise to Leadership program, please visit us at amplifyingleadership.ca, a Twin Life Coaching and Business Services division. Until next time, remember, leadership matters.